Blog Talk Radio.
Stand by. Intro is ineffective this evening.
Oh. Darlings, it's Mummy, Sybil Brunson, and we're coming to you live. Obviously, we're coming to you live because if this was pre-recorded, we certainly would have done better than that. Darlings, it's Mummy. We're broadcasting to you. We actually are broadcasting to you live from the top of the Chrysler Building, high up in the Cafe Berlin, the revolving ballroom of the Cafe Berlin, high atop the Chrysler Building, overlooking beautiful, beautiful Midtown Manhattan tonight, the Art Deco fantasy of the Chrysler Building. As glamorous as it is, and if you're listening on your phone right now or on some mobile device, and you're looking at the Chrysler Building, as pretty as it is, as lovely as it is with its stainless steel and its wonderful triangular windows, all the things about it that you love, and the gargoyles that are like falcons sticking out and all of that, I'm going to admit something to you. I'm in the studio right now with my beloved producer, Gwendolyn Holden-Berry, and we have an admission to make that as glamorous as this all seems, and as wonderful as the club is, and as beautiful as our studio audience is, because we do have a large studio audience that's listening right now outside the glass, out of the recording booth, it's really a homemade operation, darling. We actually broadcast to you using a dry cell battery and a crank and a hamster. And that's how the program gets out. And the overture, which is borrowed from Hazel, Shirley Booth loaned it to me, that is actually played on an old Edison phonograph, which is why often it goes completely haywire. So, darlings, Mummy and Gwendolyn are older women who make a dollar look like $100. And sadly, sometimes we've made $100 look like a dollar. And that's where our executive producers and the network come and say, it's time to go knit in Stratford-on-Avon. It's time for you to go to a nursing home and eat tapioca. So I'm just hoping they didn't hear that beginning tonight. Gwendolyn, I'm hoping you're going to have to cover us. You're going to be able to cover us tonight.
It was too many tin cans got in the way. I don't know.
we're going to have to, I think next week we're going to talk before the show begins, and we're going to hand crank the Edison phonograph ahead of time and get it all going so that when we start and it's action and the man points to us and then the music starts and it's dun, 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 dun. You know, it's like the old 78 with goes, and it'll be fabulous. Darlings, Mummy was not around last week. I was actually trapped. As you know, I've been traveling for work with George. Last week, we were traveling, and we were stuck in the airport at Tampa St. Pete. We were supposed to take off early in the morning, actually, and there was one catastrophe after another. First of all, our plane was out on the tarmac, and they actually turned us around and made us go back to the gate, and then they deplaned everyone, which was very unfortunate. And then it was pandemonium with all those hundreds of people trying to find flights, and that was a conga line off a cliff right there. And then there was some other thing with Southwest Airlines causing a ripple effect to all of the other airlines, including Delta, which is what we were flying. So we got to the airport at 9:30 in the morning, and we got home at 11:45 at night from Tampa. The good news is that the flight that we happened to luck into upgraded us to first class, which is very sweet, and I did make use of it. I asked the nice flight attendant, the stewardess, for 28 of those cinnamon cookie things, and she obliged. I told her that I was I was hypoglycemic and that I needed vast portions of sugar immediately, and she brought me deluxe chocolates and the cinnamon cookies and all sorts of treats. It was very nice. Sadly, the other 10 passengers in first class got nothing. We are here. I am live. Gwendolyn's here, and I want to remind you that not only is Gwendolyn my producer, but she is also the brilliant woman, the businesswoman, the chairwoman of the board of DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, DaughtersOfIsis.com. That's all one word. Go to Google, search it, DaughtersOfIsis.com, see the wonderful products they manufacture. And it, again, it's the fragrant memories of our ancestors. They deal in fragrances and essential oils and extraordinary concoctions which expand your sense of smell, your olfactory senses, but also your intellectual and spiritual and metaphysical senses. And I think that that's a lot to ask from a little bottle, and their prices are so reasonable. Imagine that little bottle, you crack the lid, you open it up, and you smell the fragrance. You can put it on your sheets, you can wear them, you can do all sorts of things with them, and they expand everything. Well, not perhaps everything, Donald Trump, but still everything that counts. They expand your intellect and your metaphysical energy, your philosophical approach to life, everything. Gwendolyn, we're now out of the winter whatevers. You know, I call it the midwinter why bothers. We're out of it. Even if the temperature drops to 40 tomorrow in New York, the bottom line is there are tulip bulbs up everywhere. There's sprouting everywhere. So what's a good fragrance for us to be looking for mid-April on DaughtersOfIsis.com? What's a good fragrance?
You know, I'm going to be very witchy with you tonight and say that our parting the veils is a great fun to work with in between the spring equinox, the April showers going into the summer months, when you're planting and dreaming and doing. And parting the veils enlists that kind of a fragrant trigger that allows you to go ahead and make your plans and get a little help from your ancestors, your spirit guides, your angels. That's what it's blended for. It's for vision. And
so in other words, this coming weekend, if I run to Fire Island and they have the water turned on and the houses and everything, and I were to go gardening, even in my puffer jacket, that would be a good fragrance to wear, you know, behind
definitely.
My ears and on my wrists.
Absolutely. And spray the house, open it up to spirit and the
good.
Cosmos for the summer.
How do you suggest we do that? Should we take the fragrance when we buy it from you and put it in a mister with some water or distilled water? How do we use it to spray the house?
With the oils, you know, you can diffuse them that way in an aromatherapy bath, candle bath. Always putting the oil on top of water that is being heated and vaporized so that you don't burn your your oils and clear the scent.
Yes.
But with Mister.
Gwendolyn, say that again, because I want everyone to get that. Those wonderful the diffusers are, they have a little votive candle in them, and then you light that, and up above it is a basin. But you don't put the oil in the basin. You put water in the basin.
You must use water. And
that's what I was just saying. So please, tell them
surprised.
That. You put water in first, and then you float the oil on top of the water.
That's right.
Right?
It expresses, yes, the water evaporating expresses the oil into your environment. And you'll be really surprised at the quality of scent that you get where you got, if you were just putting the oils in there and lighting the candle, you thought, oh, that smells good. But it's a big difference. It's like opening a doorway to, you know, a Disney a shot that pulls you back into the multitude of colored flowers. That's how different the fragrance in your atmosphere will be. No kidding.
And I love that you mentioned that by putting it directly on the heat, like the heat going against the porcelain or whatever, the diffuser, and then heating the oil directly, as opposed to having it diffuse in water, it actually can scorch some scents. It can make some scents not wonderful at all. And that's where people who do that, they say, well, I bought some whatever, and I bought some clove oil, and I combined it with geranium, whatever. And then they said it smelled horrible. It's like, well, wait a minute. Did you follow the directions of how to use a diffuser? You have to either put it in a bottle and with distilled water and shake it vigorously, and then you can spray it on sheets or on upholstery or on your curtains or whatever. But if you're going to use heat, you've got to make sure you float it on a basin of water and make sure that the water is what's heating so that then the oil diffuses, it evaporates that way.
Well,
I'm glad you brought that up.
It's not only that, but you are providing the quality and the vitality. Please never think of anything you buy that says pure on it is anything like pure essential oil. But what you're looking for is vitality. And if you're using good essential oils and you're wanting the healing effects and the medicinal applications as well, then you are absolutely killing those oils when you place them, you know, just onto heat that way. It just kills them. Fragrance of oils is lasting, but it's, you know, there's a big difference in the quality of scent between a dead oil and a living oil.
Exactly. Is Daughters of Isis doing scented candles?
No, not at this time. And we use essential oils. They're primarily for our blends. And people are looking for candles that are, you know, at least 4 ounces to, you know, 2 ounces. Even votives for us, because we really do use essential oils, would be horrendously expensive.
Right.
A 4 ounce candle would cost somebody of, say, our White Buffalo Woman blend. We used to make those up special for a gal out in Colorado. And she paid me, I guess it was almost $200 for the candle.
Right.
An
apropos of that, go on. Yes, go on.
It's an ounce of pure oil that goes into that candle. Now, you can get perfectly wonderful scented candles that are safe, but they're synthetics. They're fragrances.
Right.
And
I was just
going to
say that for.
Yeah.
Right. I was going to say that for people. Again, I would recommend, as I have personally done it, daughtersofisis.com. But if you do buy scented candles, and there are certainly, you know, oh my God, there are scented candles that are being sold for $85 a piece. I mean, these are very expensive. But one thing about scented candles, and I'm just going to, because then we have to get back to our subjects tonight. But I just want to say, if you get a scented candle, either you buy one or you're given one as a gift, okay? Listen carefully. This is one of Mummy's, Sybil says, do this, don't do that. Scented candles are not meant to be burned for hours. You don't light a scented candle and then have it burning on your mantelpiece with all your other candles for hours.
That's right.
What you do with a scented candle is you light it for about 5 minutes. You light it for 5 minutes until a small, I said small, pool of wax has liquefied. Not the whole top of the candle. A small pool, like about a size of a quarter, maybe a 50-cent piece, okay, has liquefied, and then you blow the candle out. That's where the smell comes from the liquefied wax. When you burn a scented candle and keep burning it and burning it, all you're doing is you're burning up the fragrances that they put in that candle, which have caused that candle to cost $85. What are those? Ralph Lauren makes them. What are the famous scented candles? I'm drawing a blank.
I've had one. I will tell you how you can work with essential oils and leave a candle lit, especially at what they call the 7-day color candles, is you dress them, which means that you cleanse the glass and then you put some of the oil in the palm of your hand and you coat the glass cylinder. And that,
well, that's interesting.
Yes. Well,
yeah, that's interesting.
Magical.
So, but,
that's witchy, honey. That's witchy.
But you would do that with a candle that wasn't scented. You'd do that
right,
with a candle that you were going to burn for a while.
That's correct.
Right?
If you have
a devotion
candle or something, or
exactly,
a little votive candle that's like these little tea lights or whatever. I mean, my little tea lights, I'll put a drop of oil on top of the wax and allow it to, because it puddles. And I will put it around the container. That's where it's going to emanate. And it's soft. It's not hard. And you can smell it very well, and it's not overpowering either.
No, that's a very good point. Well, anyway, I was just, looking at a list of things online of candles, and the prices are astounding. I mean, it's definitely a vanity thing. I have a scented candle here for $115 that is scented with narcissus. It's like, oh my God. So anyway, folks, do run to daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, and check out their products. They have hundreds of products available and they are fabulous. And I love experiential products. I think it's for people who have too much stuff and too much clutter. It's much better to buy caviar or daughtersofisis.com products. It's like, buy things that are experiential. And that's a wonderful thing to do now, especially with people trying to get less clutter and less materialistic and more about, enriching experiences. We've got a caller. Gwendolyn, I'll take our caller.
All righty. 513-8.
Hello.
Hello.
Birds. Hello.
Who's this?
Sybil, dear. How are you?
Yes.
This is Steve Russo. I just took
you
Steven, off the
speaker. Steven, how are
you? Better.
Good, good, good. How are you? Are you back in New York from all in a temporary respite from all that whirling around the country?
I just was talking about that. I'm home literally for about 24 hours. We leave first thing in the morning for Philadelphia tomorrow for more work, and then we're back, and then I'm going to try and squeeze in my first day of 2019 on Fire Island. I'm going to try and get out there for a day, and probably not for overnight, but just for a day to set up the garden a little bit and to, sort of rearrange the furniture in the house and take the drop cloths off everything. How is spring where you live?
Well, it's wonderful. The magnolia tree is in full magnificent bloom. I'm about to try and snap a photo against these beautiful Monet-like colors in the sky right now. But some years, the buds come out, they start to crack open, and up we get a temperature dip below freezing, and they become all brown and horrific looking.
Well,
and
the terrible thing about magnolias, and I love the idea of a magnolia. There are certain flowers I can't bear. Rose of Sharon, I just hate that flower. I don't know why. I know it's wrong to hate any of God's creations, but still. But magnolias last for about 8 seconds. We have them up and down Broadway here in the median strips on Broadway, and they have some beautiful magnolia trees. And when they start, as you say, Stephen, so eloquently, when those buds start to crack, it's like, oh, everyone's like, oh, you have people stepping out in front of oncoming traffic looking at them, you know, and killed instantly. They're squished, and their bodies look much like the magnolia buds starting. But what is so tragic is they open up, and they don't blow open like a rose and become like a faded rose, which is beautiful even as it falls apart. They literally open up to about a halfway point, and then those outer petals turn brown and sad and fall, and the next thing you know, the median strips are filled with a bunch of brown,
right,
droopy crap.
Right. Well, they only do that if they get frozen. Like mine now anyway, there's lots of them, and they are fully all the way open. They are. Here's a bloom right here now. It's large. It's as big as my palm, all the way open. But what happens so often, if you're not in the South, and I imagine even more often in New York. Let's see. New York City is further north than Cincinnati a bit. It's east, but then north. So I guess you get a little bit colder up there, or colder earlier. But right now, every bloom is all the way open, and there's no brown on them, maybe a little bit here and there, some that got frozen a little bit before they opened. But for the most part, this is the first time in a few years that it's gotten to fully open without getting at least partially frozen.
Well, I think that's partly global warming for Cincinnati. I think that's partly climate change. The world is ending, but Cincinnati is benefiting on its magnolia trees. As I was going to say, the South, magnolia trees, you know, magnolia is like synonymous with the South. It's like, oh, magnolia,
right,
how are you? It's like magnolia trees blow open in the South because it is warmer. But up here in New York, it doesn't have to be anything. Those poor magnolias are doing everything they can just to survive up here in this cold, cold climate. You know,
the
I was down in Tampa.
Boston.
I'm sorry, what?
It's the same in Boston. The magnolias in Boston.
Yes. On the other hand, being a New Englander, Boston, and my grandmother was famous for this, my grandmother had lilacs that were two-story high, two-story high. And by the way, she could have had a forest of lilacs. People up there, lilacs adore that weather. My grandmother used to spend a fortune hiring people to come with, like, what are those things? In the old days, they didn't have, like, you know, what are the vehicles with the crow's nest that comes up in
cherry
the air?
Pickers.
Cherry pickers. They did, but they didn't have like cherry pickers like we have now. I mean, they had like Italian men that would go up on two-story high ladders with all their nephews bracing the ladder from the bottom, and they would hand prune those lilac trees. It was incredible, much like what I saw down in Tampa, and I was in Palm Beach last week. I couldn't believe it. I saw azaleas and rhododendrons that were two stories high. They towered. They were huge. They were huge. Much like I remember Gwendolyn laughed out loud when I told her about in Hawaii. Got it. In Hawaii, not only is bougainvillea swallowing houses, right? It's two stories high. But even more disturbing are the poinsettias. Poinsettias, those sad little plants that people, you know, give each other at Christmas in pots that have aluminum foil on them. It's so obscene that people abuse those little plants and then them get killed. They let them die. Poinsettias in Hawaii in the tropics are trees. They're fully grown trees. They are two stories high. I was visiting a friend in a bungalow. He had a two-story bungalow in Hawaii, and his windows outside his bedroom were solid poinsettias in bloom at Christmas time. It was breathtaking. And it was the only thing that I hated was he wrapped the brick bed that they were in with aluminum foil because he was from New York and he thought they liked that. I just said, no, we can't do that. We cannot do that. And it was a joke, Stephen. It was just a joke.
Yeah. Well, I'm amazed that azaleas get that big. I have like three azalea bushes, and they seem to be kind of at a permanent size. They maybe gotten a tiny bit bigger over the years since Terry planted them, you know, 20 years ago. But they're like, they're about a foot. They're all maybe about 5.5 feet tall. But they maybe grow
warmer,
a couple
in
of
warmer
inches
climates.
Bigger a year. But,
Yeah, in warmer climates, they get much happier. Warmer than Cincinnati. Farther south, azaleas and rhododendrons. Oh, my God. Unbelievable. I couldn't get over it. They were huge. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, this year, the magnolia is the first time. Like about, you know, a fourth of the years, it gets to fully open with no freeze burn like this year.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. Other times, you know, they're partly damaged. It's just a little too far north for them to be totally happy. But those, you know, every third year when they open fully in glory, I mean, it's just glorious. The whole street is like illuminated by the pink glow, especially when the sun hits them in the middle of the day. And let's see, I've got some hyacinths. They're pink. I was at the tag at the store said they were purple, which I was hoping would offset the pink of the magnolia, nicely, but alas, they're pink. So, but there's also a large metal pink flamingo in the front yard. So we have
they must
pink
be,
and pink going on right now.
They must be so fragrant, though, aren't they?
Well, they are. I just noticed today, since it's been kind of the warmest, yes, indeed, of the last few days. Here, I'll put the phone next to it. Can you smell?
The one thing I want to say, real quick, is, folks, I can't recommend enough. People keep asking me, why does this look so good in your thing? Why does this look so good in your garden? Why does this look so good in your bay window? I cannot recommend enough pruning plants. It's one of the ways that human beings interfere in nature that is beneficial for the organism.
That's something I have to learn more about. Terry was the master gardener, and I know, I mean, there's a lot of things that are just going all gangly, and I really don't know how or when or how much to prune anything. And he
well,
knew
I'll
all
tell you
that
one that's perfect.
Well,
first of all, rhododendrons. Rhododendrons and azaleas love to be pruned. My God.
Okay.
You can't, if you want to multiply the blooms on a lilac, you must prune them back. You prune them back after they've gone to seed. You prune them back once the flowers, and that's another rule that is fast and true. It's almost universal. When a flower fades, don't let it continue to be on the blossom, whether it's a gardenia, whatever. Prune it off, and you should usually get two new buds for the one you got rid of. And you,
so
and
specifically
you
for
the math
for
of that,
azalea. There's too many blooms to pinch them off one at a time. They kind of all bloom and they kind of all die about the same time. But so then what I do, go to like the ends and just clip off the ends where the flowers grow, like right after they're done blooming, or like in the fall when they're all done? Or when is the perfect time for azaleas and how?
No, as soon as we'll talk sex. Flowers are the sex organs of a plant. So that includes a tulip, a rose, a lilac, whatever plant. There's a miracle happened, and I can't remember what age it was. It wasn't the Cenozoic. It was – Mummy will look it up and know more. I usually know this stuff. It wasn't Permian. There was a point at which plants were reproducing meiotically or whatever, and something happened. And they compare it to the X-Men thing. They compare it to the fact that every once in a while, for no reason, nature suddenly leaps forward and creates freaks. And it's just something that has happened over eons and eons and eons. And there's these different times where nature suddenly stops being gradual and just says, you know something? I'm going to try this.
Hey, I have an idea. Right.
So the thing that plants did was – almost overnight, plants began to make flowers, and they are a plant's sex organs, and that's why there's the stamen and the pistil. The pistil is in fact the vagina, the uterus, or the over, it's, I can't remember. The stamens are the actual sperm. So the stamens
right.
are the spermatozoa, and that's the pollen. That's what everyone's
well,
sneezing
the pollen
about.
Is the sperm.
Yeah, and so that's the pollen, and that lands on the pistil, and then it travels down, and it fertilizes, and it becomes the seeds. The an apple, technically, is an ovary, isn't it? No, it's the uterus.
Yep.
It is holding
well, yeah.
the seeds, so it is technically
yep.
a plant's uterus, sort of,
now,
because
the stem,
when the apple
the stem
drops...
would correspond to another... probably organ whose name we shall remain nameless on this family program.
but well, nobody's discussing it very nicely. But the bottom line is,
yeah.
is that an apple falls, and the fruit of that apple is what is supposed to nurture the seeds enough so that then they sprout and then they send roots down into the ground. And the apple, of course, is rotting on the ground, but it has been used up. So that is
right.
the – okay. What I was going to say was when – okay, this is the weird thing. When you, and I've even explained this to gardeners, and they go, oh, that is kind of clever. When you prune a rose bush, or, well, magnolias don't rebud. They won't rebud
right, right.
this year. So some plants
right.
are kind of like they're one-shot deals. They do it in the spring, and they're done. But, for instance, my gardenia, if I have blossoms on my gardenia, and I trim them off, in a few weeks, two new buds will come up on my gardenia. With roses, if you prune a rose, and you when you prune a flower off, you don't just pick the flower, you go down about an inch into the stem. You go down into the stem of a plant, and you prune that flower. Tulips will not send up a new tulip, okay? So there's certain plants that it won't work on. But roses, for instance, yes. Gardenias, yes. There's lots of plants that if you prune them back, they will send another. And what you're doing is, technically, you're giving that plant an abortion. So you're aborting
right.
the baby. And when you abort, when you remove that rose blossom as it's faded, and you trim it off and you cut down a little bit to, you know, about 2 inches down, what the plant does, it sort of panics. And it says, oh, dear God, I was trying to make a baby this summer. And so now I'm going to do two for that. And if you cut the two, you will end up with four. It becomes mathematics. It's kind of like amazing.
Right.
So you can get rose bushes.
For azalea, how would I – you know, they have a lot of blooms, but I'd love to see even more. So when is the proper time –
I'll tell you right now.
What would I do to the azalea?
Stephen, with an azalea, this is what you do. It's the same with a rhododendron. When the blossoms fade, when they get ugly, don't leave them on there. Trim them off. Trim them down about an inch down or 2 inches down.
Okay?
Trim them down, and that's it. That means that the plant is not exhausting itself trying to make little azalea seeds or rhododendron seeds. Or whatever. This is the punchline. You won't get, it's unlikely that you would get a second blooming. You won't get a second set of buds. They can't do it. But next year, you will get a very thick, healthy plant. And that's why plants like azaleas, rhododendrons, lilacs that only bloom once a year. I've actually managed to force a lilac to rebloom later in the summer.
Wow.
I've trimmed everything down, and a lilac, sometimes if the lilac is fed well and loved well and watered properly and everything is right, a lilac will say, what the hell? All right, I'll try again. And you'll see some smaller lilac blossoms begin to come out in September, but they're not big and lush, and they're not, you know, you've actually made the lilac work, but that's all right. The bottom line is this.
Well, that's
trim those azalea blossoms off as soon as they're done and keep the bush very tight. And there's one other blossom I want to tell you about, and that's forsythias. I hate when forsythias turn into these, like, six-foot-long, single, waving-in-the-air canes that are all sad-looking and horrible. It's trim. Forsythias want to be tight. Yellow cushions. For those of you that don't know what forsythias are, they're out everywhere right now. They're the chrome yellow bushes. They're just bright yellow. And when those yellow blossoms fade, when they fall off, the foliage of a forsythia is like a hedge. It's like, that's why, you know, my family had hedges of forsythias. They were shiny green leaves, as shiny as a gardenia. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Trim them back and make them tight. There's no way you're going to take all the blossoms off for forsythia. There's thousands of them. Just let them fall off, but trim those canes back and keep a forsythia tight and you know, muscular. That's what they want to be. They want to be tight and muscular.
The azalea, that's a good tip. And it has thousands of blossoms as well, but I think with the right gardening tool. And that's a good tip because they do, once the flowers are exhausted, they kind of linger on the plant, but they kind of do start to rot and get brown, and they kind of linger an unseemly amount of time. So that would be a perfect occasion to make it look less grody and also save it the energy and encourage fuller blooming next year. I used to have a whole hedge, like 30 feet long across the entire backyard, that was here probably since the 30s, and it was beautiful, brilliant, green. I also had to put on sunglasses to look in that direction in the spring. Unfortunately, I made a horrible mistake. There was one year, it was like middle of the summer, and the back, I was either not feeling well, I don't remember what was happening, I was being lazy. The backyard had gotten kind of overgrown, a little bit too much, and one of my neighbors, who was for some reason extra persnickety that year, apparently alerted some authority, and I got a note from the police department saying, if you don't do something about that backyard — it wasn't that bad, I will tell you — if you don't do something about that backyard, you're going to get a $300 fine. So I was like, oh, I better do it right now. So I hired some folks who were very nice and, for a moderate amount of money to come out and kind of, get rid of all the weeds and overgrowth in the backyard. And I said, well, save this. This is a good tree. That's a junk tree. You can get rid of that. And by then, I had totally forgotten. After the flowers fade, the forsythias, they look kind of boring and dull. It just is like a hedge with tiny green.
Oh, my God.
And I totally forgot what those were. If this was like months later, I completely forgot what they were. I forgot to see, and this whole row of bushy, funny things, leave them. I forgot. And I don't think they dug them up, but just cutting them to the ground just killed them. So I've been looking around for places to buy like a mass quantity of them, but they're kind of expensive if you buy them already large, and I would need to plant like, 30 of them. But I'm willing to do it because it was so beautiful. But I don't really know the time of year. I guess in the fall or summer, really anytime, I guess.
Anytime.
Right.
You know, the thing about forsythias, too, that was amazing was that you could clip forsythia canes off a bush, and you could root them in water. And you could you could put them in a Coca-Cola bottle. And you could put, and then you plant them in the ground.
Yep.
And you would literally get forsythias. It was amazing. Well, listen, we've got I've got to take some other callers. I'm so glad you called.
Okay. I want to make one note. When you say, darlings, I'm live right now tonight, I'm not quite sure who you're telling that to, because if people are listening to the show and it's a repeat, they'll also hear you say, I'm live right now. Just a little self-referential note. I know you're excited and you want to mention I'm live. It's kind of humorous, that's all. Anyway.
Well, I think when people tune in on the reruns, they know that it's a rerun.
Right, because they probably see on there. And that's a nice reminder that you can call in if they're listening live. So that probably helps. Anyway, wonderful talking to you. And thank you for all the advice and tips. And my azaleas will certainly benefit tremendously. Thank you so much.
I want
much
to see
the
pictures.
Help.
Mount them on your Facebook page.
I will put – when they won't bloom for a while yet. I will post some pictures of the magnolia. But the azalea will have to wait, I guess. When do they bloom? A few more, another month or two, kind of early summer, right?
Yes, later. Yep.
Okay, I will.
Well, I can't
thank
wait
you
to
so
see.
Much.
All
right.
Okay, honey.
Thank you so much.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
See you. Good night. Bye.
I want to remind everyone that speaking of Facebook, you can find Mummy on Facebook on not only her Sybil Brunchen page, but also her Sybil Brunchen fan page, and on a page that we created in these trying times, these very controversial times. It's called Sybil Brunchen's Lollipop Guild. And we did that because
we saw that so many people were being traumatized by all of the, you know, controversial political hostility, everything going everywhere on Facebook. Even Mummy is, you know, very outspoken on her own pages. So we made a page that was dedicated to just happy things, recipes and pictures of kitties and good news and lovely news and interesting facts and figures, everything that is there to delight the eye and the mind, much like getting a fragrance from Daughters of Isis. So think of it as a page that is like a big whiff of a Daughters of Isis fragrance that you just got in the mail from the nice postman today. So go to the Sybil Brunson Lollipop Guild. And for those of you that can't or won't read Mummy's stories, or you don't want to read the stories that we put on Lollipop Guild, there's also the Sybil Brunson Coloring Club. It's called, there's two of them. There's Pictures Only, Sybil Brunson's Pictures Only, and then there's Sybil Brunson's Coloring Club. And those are pictures that people post, and you can get your own set of crayons or magic markers, and you can just look at the pictures on your laptop and color them and point at them and laugh to yourself and drool or whatever you do. And you don't have to think. Mummy stories do require a little bit of thinking. And that's why animals even lower than primates often enjoy mummy stories. So there you go. All right. We have another caller. Gwendolyn, I'll take our caller.
845 area code. Your
Hello?
Mic is on.
Hello, who's this?
Lauren Clark.
How are you?
Fine, I'm awake.
Lauren, you are awake. I was afraid that you were going to be fall asleep during my before my broadcast. I'm hoping you won't fall asleep during it, my dear.
I'm listening to all the valuable plant tips because I have a black thumb. So.
Oh, well, I try so hard to help people with that, you know, because it is creepy to have plants either given to you or you buy a plant, you know, at the grocery store or something, and it says it's easy to raise, and then when it dies, it makes you feel terrible. I mean, especially if you're sensitive to the fact that plants are like animals. I mean, they're living things. They're not really meant to be props or toys or things that we just sort of, you know, take for granted. They're actually struggling. You know, I look at my plants in my bow window and in the garden, and they're trying to live. Everything is trying. Everything alive is trying to live. And I think that we have to honor that. You know, it's so I feel badly when I hear that. Have you tried? I mean, can you kill a cactus?
Yeah, I think I have. The only
no.
thing I had a plant that belonged to my grandmother and I killed.
Oh,
was
what was it?
Years old and I killed.
Lauren, what was the plant?
It was a snake plant.
Lauren.
I know. Something that
Lauren.
That thrives
okay.
on neglect.
Now, Lauren, for heaven's sakes. A snake plant. Do you understand that people don't, they almost don't, snake plants are almost extinct now because people regard them as so 1940s dentist office that they're such a window box in a doctor's office in 1952 that people don't, they and split leaf philodendrons, the big, big Ramar of the jungle, split leaf philodendrons, those are those big heart shaped green leaves that then suddenly start splitting. They're healthy,
yeah.
But they actually split. Those and snake plants are carryovers from a time where people couldn't kill plants. A snake plant is undead. I mean, it's like a vampire. I mean, if you just have soil lying around and,
yes,
you know, some light in another room, a snake plant will grow to be 6 feet tall. How did you manage to do it?
The good thing was that several of my cousins also got cuttings. So between the stomach...
Well,
still have
that's
it,
good.
Yeah, I just...
So that
I,
means it's going on. If you gave them cuttings from the original snake plant, then that means it's
well,
going on.
My,
it's
when
actually...
my aunt died, when my aunt died, we broke up the plant. We each took one. She had a window of them, and we each took one. So I'm hoping my cousins have kept them going. But I do have an aloe vera that I have kept alive for years, so it's not...
Lauren, I have a question. Where did your grandmother live with her 100-year-old snake plant?
In Manhattan.
Really? Oh, my God. What an interesting piece
and I'd have been
like interior design with that. That would be. And then what about your aunt? Did she live in Florida? Because snake plants are very tropical. They're very Florida.
Manhattan.
Ah, interesting. I had a friend when I first when I first moved to New York. I had an elderly woman friend who had a penthouse, and she had windows everywhere and window boxes, and she had snake plants growing in her window boxes along with splitleaf. She had all the tropical plants that one would have if you lived in a lanai in Florida. You know, she made her living room and her study into like lanais that you would find in Miami or Hawaii. It literally felt when you were in there on a winter day with the sun blazing in, it would get very warm in there, and you would feel like, oh, I'm not in Manhattan, I'm in Florida, because the plants, and she also, this is so cute, she had wicker furniture and bamboo and rattan furniture, right, the 40s, and it was all done in bark cloth. You know what bark cloth is? It's that 1940s very durable fabric that's printed in those big leaf patterns, and you know,
oh,
it looked like Florida.
Yes.
And, so it's bark cloth.
My aunt has that as a slipcover on a chair too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would slip cover things and do throw pillows,
right,
and they would mismatch them. They would do them in all these different floral prints and everything.
Yeah.
So you went into, I mean, my LSD trips would kick back in when I would go there and visit her. I would suddenly start having to, I would have LSD retro trips, and she'd be serving me tea and cookies, and I would begin to hallucinate that there were spiders on the wall. It was very sad, very sad. I sometimes frightened her, but her upholstery frightened me. So, well, I think it's very funny. Lauren, how are you spending spring? How are you? What are you doing this spring?
What am I doing this spring? I volunteer. I'm taking classes. I'm trying.
Volunteering for what?
Excuse me?
What are you volunteering?
I volunteer at an arts center in Poughkeepsie.
That's wonderful. Are you a docent? What do you do there?
Oh, I'm on the board, but I take care of membership. I man the place a day. It's the Barrett Arts Center.
That's great.
And great. It's a almost 200-year-old building that was named after an artist who lived there from 1902 to 1947, and it's a great building, and we have national curated art shows, and so if you come to Poughkeepsie,
well, that's lovely. I just might.
I live far though. Yeah, it's beautiful, and I'm taking some classes at Vassar, and trying to get back into painting classes, and so that's what I'm doing, and kind of looking at the weather, waiting for it to really be spring.
Yeah. Well, I said earlier that I'm waiting to get out to Fire Island for the first time and to start putting the flower pots and everything in place,
yeah,
and to take, you know, dust covers off the furniture and everything. But one thing I've been thinking about is, well, I started doing my needlepoint again just recently, and I'm doing a lot of writing. I'm working on a play that I want to get into its first readings this spring out on Fire Island with some friends who are in the cast. But I've also... I don't know if I should say this. I bought a sketch pad and I bought a bunch of my pencils and different things. And I think I'm going to start sketching again. Yep. I've been going to so many art museums on my trips, on my work trips, that I've been thinking, you know, I should really start getting back into my art, because I loved taking art classes. I loved doing pottery. I loved all of it. My hands are very much a focal point for my energy, and I love making things. So I think it's great that you're trying to do the same thing. You painted, what did you do? Watercolors or oils or acrylics? What did you do?
I've been taking oil classes for a number of years, and then I kind of fell away from it last year just because of life, and I just decided I'd go, you know, back to it again. But I was an art teacher in another life, so I retired. Your mind goes into another place.
Yes, it
you
is
know,
interesting. That's why actors, there are so many famous movie stars, for instance, who also are painters or sculptors. Mm-hmm. Or your creativity is a fountain, but it also travels underground. It's like a spring that may travel 3 miles down the road and come up as a different thing as well. Suddenly you've gone from being an actor to a poet, or you also sew, or I love that. I mean, my goodness, if I had the space, I'd have a sewing machine again. I'd have it all. So I'm so glad to hear that you're doing that. That's great. That's great. Will you keep me posted on if you do start?
I will. And, you know, I'm friends with Ann Gelbert.
Oh, yes.
We went to high school together.
Oh, that's cool. That's nice.
So, you know, I want to get back together with her, but, you know, she's the one who told me about you. I've told friends. We have a few mutual friends on Facebook.
We do, indeed. We do, indeed.
We do.
All right. I will attack my needlepoint and my sketch pad.
Similar political views.
I'm sorry, what?
And certainly similar political views.
Yes. I promised that I wouldn't talk too much about politics tonight. I was trying to keep it light and gay and springy.
No, today was not a good day. Today was not a good day. So. But
anyway,
talk about flowers. I won't keep you from the next caller. And it's good talking to you. And happy traveling.
Thank you. I'm so glad you called, Lauren. Have a good night.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Gwendolyn?
Yeah.
Gwendolyn, do we have another caller?
No, we don't. Not at the moment.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to mention a couple of things. First of all, I did get a couple of notes. Oh, you know what? I'm going to make one political statement, and that'll be it. And I'm sorry, I always preface this with, I know I'll take heat for this, but I stand by my convictions. My liberal / progressive credentials are pretty much intact and unassailable. But having said that, there are times where I think the ACLU be damned, the rights of the quote-unquote individual must sometimes bend to the rights and the welfare of the community, because none of us live as hermits. We don't live in mountaintops, you know, in Nepal, unbathed and eating, you know, beetles that wander into our cave on the ground. We are social beings, and we are in communities. And whether you're in a community of 8 million, like I am in New York, or you're in a community of 8, like some of you are in Butt Poke, Idaho, if there's more than one person around you, you owe a certain responsibility, despite what the NRA, KKK, extremist right-wing, people think. You owe something to people next door to you. If you're a survivalist, then climb down into your bomb shelter and stay there. The subject I'm going to mention, and it's short, is vaccinations. I know there's all of this hoopla about autism and allergic reactions and everything. I don't know what to say to you people. I don't know what to say, but we have evolved and developed into a species that has attacked diseases that killed people 100 years ago, that killed people 50 years ago. It's almost unheard of that people get polio anymore. It is, diphtheria does not kill people in the United States. Diseases that used to kill people, very educated first world white people, in Britain in the 1860s, do not kill people anymore. Royalty was wiped out by tetanus. You could prick your finger on a rusty nail and die agonizingly of tetanus. We don't do that anymore because we figured out how not to. Measles is serious business, and I'm so glad they're posting photographs of children. I'm talking about babies with full-blown measles, and I'm not talking about like heat rash looking. I'm talking about a baby whose palm, they showed a baby's palm tonight on the news, covered with bright red, blood red dots as if she had embraced a cactus. It was horrible looking. And she was too young to be inoculated, okay? And a pregnant woman who either knows that she's pregnant or doesn't can't be inoculated. And people whose immune systems are compromised. I'm not just talking about AIDS people. I'm talking about someone on chemotherapy for cancer. If they haven't been inoculated, they can't be inoculated because they are too fragile to have a measles shot. So these people, and there are Park Avenue bitches doing this. This isn't all like, you know, religious fanatics. Although I must tell you, I've never had problems with the Hasidim and their views and their religious practices or anything. But this is a time where we're going to have to draw the line. The Hasidic community in New York, in New York City, in Brooklyn, measles is everywhere. And they are refusing to get inoculated, and they are insisting on going into public places like hospitals to be treated, where they expose everyone to measles. This is unforgivable. This is where we have to say, no, I'm sorry. Your sad 15th century thinking, your flat worlder mentality, whatever your thing is, it's not going to work. If you want to be that way, then you should return to your community, to your neighborhood, and remain there. If you're going to endanger a woman who's walking down the street and she doesn't know she's pregnant and she's going to give birth, a la Agatha Christie's, you know, The Mirror Cracked, if you remember that murder mystery, which Gwendolyn was mentioning earlier before the show, we both laughed about that. That was an amazing thing that Agatha Christie wrote about, and it was timely. She wrote that book ages ago. If you're going to endanger people because of your religious beliefs or your sad prejudices about, you know, well, I could do this or I could do, then stay away. Yeah, you have every right to feel that way. Don't bring it into the public sphere. You have no right to infect some newborn baby in a baby carriage because you're an idiot. Okay? You've heard Mummy talk this way before. And you know something? If you don't like this view, please take yourself off my Facebook page because I don't need you. I get 100 invitations, the requests to be a Sybil Brunson person every week. I turn them away. So if you don't like the fact that I'm saying you have to be a responsible member of the 21st effing century, then goodbye and good luck with where the measles go in your household when your sister-in-law gets pregnant and doesn't know it, and she gives birth to either a baby who is seriously compromised or who miscarries because you gave them measles. Keep your measles and your flat-worlding thing and your sad dancing around the campfire superstitions. You keep them in your place. Your Park Avenue penthouse, your community in Brooklyn, you keep it there. Do not bring it to Times Square. Do not cause pandemonium. We have pandemonium in New York right now. And also, you check the states. Go to CNN. Look at the number of states that have measles outbreaks everywhere. All of those babies, all of those unborn babies, all of those young children who are too young to be inoculated, you have compromised them. You have killed them. Stop that. You're an asshole. Okay, that's that. Somebody asked me, Sybil Brunson, you gave a home tip about ice cubes. Oh, somebody wrote me real quick, and we only have a second. Somebody wrote me and said, why is it that my friend has perfect ice cubes even though she doesn't have a refrigerator that dispenses ice cubes? Her ice cubes are always perfect. Mine are always shattered and fractured and everything. Two tips real quick. When you fill your ice trays, right, by hand, don't fill them all the way to the top. Fill them just into the cube, but don't let them run into each other. Keep them that way and do not stack them. I know if you have five or six ice trays and you want to stack them. The problem is when you do that, either when you fill them too full and or when you stack them, they freeze weirdly, and that's where ice cubes shatter. I learned that trick years ago. Just keep fill them almost to the top of the individual pockets, but not all the way, and then certainly don't stack them. Try it a couple of times. I think you're going to find your ice cubes are beautiful. They'll look as if they came out of like a dispenser. We're running out of time. I'm going to be on next Monday. Remember, we were brought to you by daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant why do I voice? I'm going to redo that. I want to rewrite that. Maybe I had a former life with this. The fragrant memories of our ancestors. I am my own ancestor, but we'll explore that next week. We're on every Monday at 8 o'clock. My wonderful producer, Gwendolyn Holden Berry, is also also the founder of DaughtersOfISIS.com. Do check out their products. Gwendolyn, well, shall we get together next Monday night again?
Yeah, I'll be
okay.
With
all right. Well, if the Edison phonograph is cranked up, you can take us on home. Good night, everybody. Mummy loves you more than anything. Good night, everybody.